Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Assemblywoman Patricia Fahey, a Democrat elected in November 2012 to represent the 109th Assembly District from the city of Albany and towns of Bethlehem, Guildeland, and New Scotland. Welcome, Assemblywoman Fahey. You know, you've done very well since you got here. You know, you've established a terrific reputation. You started out as a sort of people's populist here in Albany and graduated to the Assembly. And you are a woman who is widely respected. So I guess this week we wanted you on because we wanted to know what one widely respected member of the Assembly thought as we choose a new speaker and go into a whole new chapter in the Assembly. So can you give us a little bit of a story of how you think this whole thing unfolded?
As briefly as possible, I think while we had a hint that there were some legal problems, we saw the New York Times story about a month and a half ago, but the speaker has repeatedly said, you know, there were unfounded charges, and it kind of just went away, quite frankly, until 2 weeks ago tomorrow, Thursday morning, when everybody woke up to see that he was about to be arraigned and arrested and arraigned Thursday morning 2 weeks ago. And it was a complete shock. There's no other word for it. It was a shock. I take people at their word. I still believe, firmly believe in the presumption of innocence. And I think everybody is entitled to that. But with the arrest and with as the story unfolded, with the seriousness of the charges, the Assembly had a big decision to make. And that was, you know, was it going to be so distracting that a change need to be made? And quite frankly, it was one of the more difficult decisions I think that I've had to make in my short 2 years in the Assembly. It was the most difficult in terms of my decision and my role in this. And I was one who came down on the side of I had to put the entire body of the Assembly forward first. And we are heading into very difficult budget negotiations, a budget I have many concerns about. And as it turns out, it really did end up being essentially the consensus of the Democratic Majority Conference that we did need leadership that could focus on this. And again, that is saying that I am not trying to play judge or jury in any case. It is just that we needed somebody who could be 100% focused as a leader.
But the Democratic Conference seemed to me to say, as soon as Shelley was arrested, was, okay, we're standing behind him, and that changed. So what were the reasons for the change? Did the members go back to their districts and get yelled at? What happened?
In my case, no, that was not the case. That was the morning the story broke. I didn't see the story until I woke up actually at 6 a.m., so I only had the couple of hours to digest this. But when the members met in conference, that would have been about, it was before 10 a.m. that morning, again, that Thursday morning. And at that point, there was only the New York Times article that was talking about the impending complaint, the charges in the complaint. There were no details about the charges, and the complaint was not available until, I think, an hour or two after that.
35 pages worth.
35 pages worth, yes. No small task. And I'm not a lawyer, by the way, never pretend to be, but it was only as the story unfolded. And initially in the conference, it was a few members that went out and kind of spoke. At the time in conference, they said they were speaking for themselves. It came across as speaking for more of the mm-hmm. body. But I didn't say anything until I had a chance to read it, and really didn't make a public comment until I think the Monday afterwards, once I had a chance to digest it all, really read it and see. But it was, I think it was just more the serious nature. And then it was, as people did, I know for me, I talked a lot to a lot of members and really had the time to reflect over the weekend. And it, for me, it was a decision of what is best for the institution, the strength of the institution, and putting our best foot forward on the budget.
So now, nature abhors a vacuum. About five people put themselves forward for the job. The upstater, Morelli, he can't have it because he's from upstate. It's that simple.
Yes, it is somewhat that simple.
He can't have us upstate. Then we get the Manhattan chair of the Democratic Party, the Bronx chair who is successful of the Democratic Party. Some people call them the bosses of Manhattan and the Bronx. And in lightning time, Assemblyman Hastie, Carl Hastie, becomes the leader. And then, of course, as always happens with these things, everything sort of unfolds and he gets the job. But in the meantime, the New York Times puts out a series of articles which, if not impugning Hastie, raise some troubling questions about whether or not he was in Albany all the time, because he was the third largest garnerer of money for the time he was in Albany. And it turns out that his boss, his former boss, Larry Seabook, is doing time in prison. So there was a certain je ne sais quoi smell to the whole thing.
There are a number of articles that have come out over the last couple of weeks. Thank God I know a number of New York City members, and they'd warned me that this decision would essentially be made in New York City, and that is really what happened. The votes in the Democratic Conference, there are 105 of us. About 62 of those votes, 62 of those members are in the New York City area. I was one who argued to give this time, give the candidates chances, a chance to come before the entire conference, present their platform. As you know, I was one of the instigators, if you will, of some of these reform efforts on the part of a couple of dozen members. Now we're up to about three dozen. And I, by the way, I started some of those conversations with other members that I know best while talking whether the speaker had stepped down or not. Some of those conversations began. In other words, you know, I didn't want to waste a good crisis. There are some reforms that I believe are important on a transparency, on opening up the process a little bit, that I thought would be very timely regardless of what happened. But as a part of that, a number of the folks involved in these coalition efforts asked that each of the members have a chance to meet with us, those forming this coalition of reform, along with, I would have liked for the Capital Region delegates to meet. It happened much faster, and I think because of the decisions made in New York City by the party leaders down there, the mayor, I'm told, others. So it was over before it was over. That said, I've heard many, many good things about Carl Hastie. I had a number of members tell me a couple of great things. He's strong. He's tough. He was probably the best, had the best reputation for negotiations, a very strong negotiator. With regard to the articles that have come out about him, some of the negative pieces, he did meet with a reform group before the caucus on Monday. And
that's your group.
This informal group that has come together. There was about 25, 30 of us in that meeting. And the first thing he said is, I am not under investigation. So that helped. He also explained why he had missed a good few dozen votes last year. 74 of those were missed in one day when he went to his daughter's moving up ceremony. I understand that. And he did explain that the charges, a number of the charges that are out there, were for unitemized expenses of $50 and under, which is something that is currently a legal practice. So he addressed a number of issues. That said, I strongly encouraged him, and I encouraged my colleagues that we wait a week on this vote. I would have preferred the vote to be February 10th as opposed to yesterday. But in my two short years, I'm more than able to read the consensus of the body. The overwhelming consensus, including of the now speaker, was that the vote occur yesterday. So I read I saw the consensus, and I was supportive and respectful of the vote going forward, even though I repeatedly said my preference was to give this more time.
Patricia Fahey, you know, one of the things that they had against Shelley Silver, I want to ask you this up front, was that he didn't move fast enough when it came to people who had complaints by women that they had been unfairly sort of sexually targeted by people in the legislature, legislators. What do you make of all of that?
I was sworn in January 2013. So that's, again, just 2 years ago. I definitely have heard those allegations and concerns, and have talked to even staff members who said that, you know, the body was not as responsive as it could have been, that the speaker, the leadership was not as responsive. So I've definitely heard that. I will tell you, because in 2012, when I was running, it was kind of the height of the Vito Lopez scandal, or the concerns raised about him, the allegations, I did find the speaker incredibly responsive to the Women's Caucus. I'm a member of the Women's Caucus. It just grew by 8 additional members with the new class in 2014. So I did find him very responsive, and it probably was in light of the scandals. And at one point, he and others said, we weren't fast enough. So there was an admission by a number of folks that said, you know, in hindsight, we would have done things differently.
Now, just let's make sure that everybody understands. He personally was not accused
of sexual harassment. Absolutely
it
not.
Was
I
that
think
he
it
was not responsive as the leader with the allegations.
Yes, and I don't want to put words in somebody's mouth, but I know at the time when he met with the Women's Caucus, which he did on a number of occasions, particularly in 2013 when we were new and in response to these allegations about Lopez, you know, again, at that time, he and others said, we weren't fast enough. We are going to do better. We are going to listen. And I felt that we were really listened to. And because we were a block and a growing block at that point of over 30 members, 30 women, there was a real attentiveness, which I found very helpful. At that point, as you know, we were fighting for the 10-point plan. So for a number of reasons, every time we asked for a meeting, we got it. And one of the first things I had to do, and it was mandatory, were ethics and harassment training. And I thought that was very productive as well. And now I know, in light of all the crises, one of the first things the new members had to do was, they said it was, you know, non-negotiable. They had to be at the ethics and harassment training.
So because this is in television, and because I'll probably get into trouble for even saying this, you're an attractive woman. So what I want to know is when you enter this culture, what do your antennas say to you about the way in which people conduct themselves in the assembly? Are women in trouble in the New York State Assembly because of the old culture, or are people learning?
I have personally not encountered any problems with regard to your comment about me.
That's what I'm asking, yes.
No, I have absolutely not. In terms of that kind of culture, I have found people very open to helping, very open to wanting to work with you. And no. Now, am I old enough to have been around the block a little bit and spent many years on Capitol Hill in Congress?
Sure.
I occasionally caught a comment that I didn't appreciate.
When you were a staffer,
a very different role to play as staff. So, sure, and have things changed in the 20 years since I've been a staff on Capitol Hill? I would hope so on Capitol Hill. Certainly here, I really do think there is the attentiveness. Many comments were made in the last two, especially 2 years ago at the height of the Vito Lopez comments.
People call him Vito Gropez.
Vito Gropez.
Because that was his reputation.
I hadn't heard that one, but I'm not surprised. But a number of members made comments at the time that they would never let their daughter work here, intern there. I have a daughter who just turned 16. I can guarantee you I would let her work in the assembly. But I think because I think it's a place where if there were ever an incident, she would feel comfortable. And I've raised her to be comfortable and to speak up for herself. And I would think that we're doing more as a society to make sure that women, any form of minority, would feel comfortable in any type of situation where they are being supervised and not feeling comfortable. So I would hope we've improved. But you know what? It's kind of like ethics reform. No matter what we do, or campaign finance reform, there's always an end run and there's always going to be an exception. So we have to be vigilant. You can never be vigilant enough on these issues.
So let's get into Patricia Fahey. Let's get into the governor now, perhaps sensing an opportunity, which I suspect is the case, decides that he's going to come up with a total ethics reform package for the legislature. And some of them are, I would think, perfectly reasonable, but the members of the legislature would have fought them tooth and nail while Shelley Silver was there. Can we go over some of those?
Sure. Can I start by saying that my understanding is it is not a total ethics package, as you just referred to it.
Only as he sees it.
Okay, because I was very disappointed. First of all, let me back up and say I've co-sponsored every ethics bill, every campaign finance. I am fully, fully supportive of public financing of campaigns. Anything that I think will allow us to get past this and strengthen the institution and get past some of the scandals on finances, ethics, or sexual scandals, I'm been an active and vocal supporter of. Just on the governor's proposal from a couple of days ago, the one thing I understand was not included in that package, as I'm reading it, is the caps and disclosures for LLCs, the limited liability corporations. And that's one where there have been lots of questions, lots of concerns, and past abuses.
Including with the governor.
Including, I'm afraid, with the governor. So I'm a little baffled as to why that did not make it in the package.
And so this is hiding behind an LLC. We don't really know who they are. It's an LLC. That's a limited liability corporation, and you would have liked to see that included.
Yes, I understand it's not in the package as proposed, so I just wanted to correct you when you said total. I don't think it's as total
right.
as I'd like it.
You are right to correct me. We will propose, says the governor's guy, the most extensive disclosure of outside income in the United States of America. You have heard the phrase, follow the money. We're creating a new expression, explain the money. Officials will have to disclose to the public all the outside income they receive from who, for what, and whether there is any connection to state government or the office they hold. That seems pretty good, doesn't it?
It seems pretty good, and I know Speaker Hastie has now committed to working on, is committed to reform, and sunlight was the key word he used in his speech yesterday before the body. So I think that there
him?
Is going to, I do trust him, and I do believe that the Assembly, as you know, we've been passing various versions of ethics reform and campaign finance bills since 1986,
and
long
knowing,
before I got there. They
knowing,
just never passed overall.
And knowing each time that the Senate would not go along.
And knowing
so
each time. Right, right. So that's why I've said they still have not become law, and we've got a long way to go. But I think the Assembly in general has a pretty good track record on this. That said, I do think there will be a hyper-focus on this now. And, you know, again, that's part of why we have a coalition, if you will, of reformers to really try to commit this. That doesn't mean we agree on every reform. This is going to take a lot of work. And I should mention, I've got some terrific colleagues here in the Capital Region that do have outside income. And so I think there have to be exceptions to that. I may not have an outside income, but I understand my colleague, who I think very highly of, John McDonald, owns a business, a pharmacy business. You know, so there are certain, you know, there have to be some exceptions. Phil Steck is a prominent and well-respected attorney. I understand that there have to be some exceptions. I think one approach that I've heard makes a little sense is having some small amount that would be accepted, for instance, for adjunct professors, as Speaker Hastie has been in the past. So allow for a few thousand dollars to be exempted of outside income. And then when it's more than that, such as those who do have outside businesses or those that do practice, that there be the full disclosure and that there be some type of review. Because again, there, as with many rules, there are exceptions. While it may not affect me because this is my income, I do not have outside income.
Well, other people
I want to be cognizant.
You know, I mean, people want this job. Most people in the legislature, by the time they're done with all the perks and everything else, are bringing home about $100,000. Most Americans would say that's good. Make a choice. Either have a pharmacy or, you know, that people will come to or not come to. Or
I appreciate that. And yes, it's I make the $79,000. I make the amount. I don't have any Lulus or perks or anything else. And I don't get any per diem, by the way, because I live right here.
Stick around a while. You'll
stick around. Right. I guess so. But I do want to be sensitive that I live here in Albany, much lower cost of living than members who live in New York City. And I think $79,000, especially if you have children, I'm right now paying college fees. If you have children, it's not as generous a salary as most would say in New York City. I ran for $79,000, though. I'm not looking for a raise.
Pat, because we only have a few minutes, I want to ask you this: should public officials who are convicted of a felony give up their pensions?
I'm a co-sponsor of that bill. It's a new colleague of mine from 2012 that is the sponsor of that bill, David Buchwald. Yes. Even then, though, I have heard some differences in the conference of saying don't penalize the family, especially if it's a spouse who has not been working and the member is convicted of a crime, ends up in jail, and leaves a spouse destitute if they have been an income.
Tough. So they should have thought about that.
Yes, they should have thought about that, but I know there have to be some details looked at on that. But again, I'm a co-sponsor. I am supportive. Again, I know we need to do everything we can to crack down on abuses.
Personal use of campaign funds.
You know, I need to see some examples of that, but agree that, right, campaign funds should be for campaign-related expenses.
Should they be allowed to, should you be allowed to pay off your credit cards?
Absolutely not. You know, it was the hardest thing. As you know, Alan, I ran as a grassroots candidate. In fact, most people dismissed me when I entered the race, which at that point had, you know, couple of dozen people in it. Ultimately, it was a six-way campaign. I was initially dismissed as too much of a long shot. And the single thing people kept saying to me is, you can't raise the money, you can't raise the money. I decided to run regardless of the money. And we raised the vast majority of our funds from $100 and under. So I am committed to not abusing those funds. They're too hard to get.
Well, Pat Fahey, very quickly, what other things besides the governor's package would you say ought to be done?
Well, the LLCs that I mentioned,
yes.
I want it within the body itself. I'm rather focused as well on some changes there. I want to see as much transparency as possible. I want to see some technological upgrades. I want to see more of a decentralization, if you will, without chaos, because I know the more democracy, the more you can fuel paralysis. So more of a decentralization to empower our committees. We have 45 committees. I think that may be too much, but we need to make them working and have more input from members, better participation.
I got 2 minutes, but I got to tell you, one of the things that drives me crazy about this representative body is that we may put the assembly on television, something I fought for years. And I remember going to Stanley Steingut and saying to him, we have to do this. And he said, but Alan, who will pay for it? But now there are too many secrets. There's a secret caucus of conferences, because that's where the decisions are made. Who's fooling who?
The caucus, the conference, the majority conference, we do meet in private. And I've asked this question from, I think, my first day there. It is abiding by the open meetings law because it is a conference and no final decisions are made there. We do meet the open meetings law. That said, I know Speaker Hastie has committed to more open participation, more transparency in the body. I do think you have to have an ability for folks to talk and negotiate. And by the way, the running joke in conference is that everything said is immediately out on Twitter anyway.
You know
and
what?
It happens rather constantly.
It happens sometimes, but it's not really true. I mean, I would want to know what was said in those conferences by whom, so we could hold them responsible.
I will tell you, even in the meetings the Monday, Tuesday, a week and a half ago, when we were in rather intense negotiations, repeatedly members stood up and said, okay, it's on Twitter, such and what such and such just said. So it's not as confidential. But that said, one of the things that has been brought up by again, some of the folks involved with the Reform Coalition is a change in the steering committee. That has been one of those so-called secret committees that I didn't know about, but from my years on Capitol Hill, I'm aware that it is a way to really work with the members to steer legislation and have more of a review before it gets to the full conference and before it lives or dies elsewhere. Empowering that steering committee, bringing that out into the open, having it function as a integral part of the body is one of the changes that I am looking for.
Well, Pat Fahey, there are so many other things I want to ask you about, so you'll have to come back at some point. But I wanted to ask you about charter schools and public education, and I know you have some very definite thoughts on all of that.
I have some very definite thoughts, and I'd love to come back. Very serious concerns, as we know now, no one's got the magic formula. There's some good and there's some bad on the charter schools, and we see that even here in Albany.
Thank you so much for being with us. It's very kind of you. And if you listen to the radio, you'll be hearing some of your comments coming back at you. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.